Thanks for hitting that button. You are listening to the Mark the Shark Show.
All right, guys, you ready to rock? Are you excited? Well, sit back and enjoy. And welcome to the Mark the Shark Show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Mark the Shark Show. Hope everyone's having a great day. We have a great episode in store for you, so sit back and enjoy the show. Hi, everyone. This is your host, Mark the Shark. I want everybody to know that not only do I have this podcast, I have another podcast about the sport of mixed martial arts. So if you're into that kind of thing, check out my other podcast called The Mark the Shark MMA Show. And if you want to be on that show or this show, make sure you contact me on Facebook at Mark the Shark MMA Show. And that's my Facebook channel. Or you can go to my website, www.markthesharkmmashow.com. Again, it's www.markthesharkmmashow.com. And you can also follow me on Instagram at Mark_Ritorto2. That's Mark, M-A-R-C, underscore Ritorto, R-I-T-O-R-T-O, 2. That's for Instagram, or Mark BJJ Fighter on Twitter. And also, don't forget to check out my YouTube channels. I got the Rockin' with Mark YouTube channel. That's Rockin' with Mark with a C again. Or the Mark the Shark MMA Show, all on YouTube. All right, guys. Hope you enjoy the podcast and keep on listening. Hey, guys. I just want to make a quick announcement. You can now get my book called Marcus the Vampire, available in audiobook format. You can find it on Audible, ACX.com, and on iTunes. Again, the name of the book is called Marcus the Vampire, The Dark World Chronicles. It's also available on Amazon.com. Check it out today if you can.
Hi, everyone. This is Deborah Driggs, and you are listening to the Mark the Shark Show.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Rockin' with Mark YouTube channel. And today, we got a fellow YouTuber, Jarrett Borkowski. He's got his own YouTube channel called Sound Guitar Lessons. And just so you guys know, if you're watching this on a YouTube channel, it will also appear on my podcast, known as the Mark the Shark Show, which, you know, appears on Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, and et cetera. And let me just get it out of the way. If you can, please give this video a thumbs up. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the channel. It really helps me out. Now let's get over to Jarrett. Hey, Jarrett, how you doing?
Hey, doing great. Thanks. How are you?
Good.
Awesome.
It's a little chilly here in Jersey. I don't know. You're in Washington, I think,
right? I'm in Seattle, Washington. Yeah, it's rather temperate. It's the typical, it's kind of a warm winter actually here so far, but it gets chilly occasionally. But yeah. But thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, just so people know, like, you know, usually my YouTube channel, I do a lot of gear reviews, you know, amp reviews, piano lessons. But if this is your first time watching this on the YouTube channel, occasionally what I do is I interview musicians, particularly ones that have YouTube channels, some of them, you know, just for upcoming musicians. And I just happened to see Jarrett's channel, and I hit him up on as a comment and asked him if he can do this particular interview, and he said yes. So I'm pretty stoked about that. And what I like about your YouTube channel is that you go into a lot of theory, right?
Yeah. Lots
right. So it's a little different. You know, I have, you know, like some channels, they just do gear reviews. Yeah. Some like Morning Music, he does, he does a lot of guitar lessons.
Yeah. A lot of intro, a lot of how to play this particular song kind of lessons. Yeah. On his channel. Yeah.
And for me, I was like, ooh, what caught my eye, I think the first video I saw of yours was the chord inversions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we'll get into that in a second, because what I was looking at is, because, you know, I know what inversions are, and I also find them find it to be easier to obviously to be doing on the piano or keyboard.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
how do you do that on a guitar?
It's a hassle.
I was watching your video and you went over it pretty well. You know, like you had like different methods. One was using the root notes and so forth like that. But going far back, like how did you get into music? Was
I was about 10 or 11. Before that, wasn't in a musical family or anything like that. I mean, I listened to, there was, you know, a little bit of music I had listened to. Probably the first music I was like interested in as a kid was Weird Al. Like at that time in the 90s, that's what, you know, a lot of kids got into. And then, you know, right when I was a 10 or 11 or so, this is when grunge was huge. This is, you know, Nirvana this is like peak Nirvana wave. And also when like Green Day was a big deal. And I just got into, you know, that kind of alternative rock. I got the bug for it. I just was super into it. And, you know, I started dressing the part with all the super baggy corduroys that are ripped up and, you know, clothes that are way too, and now you see those 90s clothes coming back. But yeah, I was like infatuated with just the sound, the feel, the imagery, everything. And so naturally, like a lot of people, you know, it's similar to when people talk about when they saw the Beatles on Johnny Carson, and they're like, oh, everyone the next day was playing guitar, you know? So it was an obvious thing to like, yeah, sure, I'm going to start playing guitar. My uncle had a Flying V guitar, and he had one. He never played it ever. And he realized I was interested in music and was like, hey, you can just have this guitar. So he sent it to me. And is this like shiny white Flying V guitar, and that was my first guitar. You can't even like really sit with those guitars because they slide off your legs. So I had to sit. It's funny, I had to sit, and I'm like a, you know, 10 or 11 year old, and I had to sit with the V, you know, sitting on your leg so it can sit up, which eventually I studied classical guitar, and that's like a classical position that I was like sitting with, you know, playing a Flying V guitar. But yeah, I just went into it with like you know, super raw. And I was always really creative as a kid, and I was writing poems and stuff when I was young. When I was younger, I was into like Shel Silverstein and Dr. Seuss and stuff. So as a little kid, I was writing poems. And so when I started playing guitar, I was like, oh, I can put these poems to music. And I just kind of winged it and just, you know, made stuff up. And that was my favorite thing in the world. And, you know, I just wanted a way to be creative. And that worked really well. By doing that, my parents, you know, saw that and were like, hey, you should get real lessons. So they signed me up for lessons. My teacher happened to be, we weren't looking for this, but my teacher happened to be specifically a jazz guitar teacher. And so he like converted me as quickly as possible to, and he, you know, he was open to everything. And I am too. I love all kinds of music. But just early on, he was trying to kind of teach me jazz stuff. So I ended up playing jazz in like middle school band, high school band.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I knew you seemed to have a lot of formal training because you go into like deep theory, and I see you playing a lot of jazz. I didn't know if you learned jazz while you were in school, or I didn't know it was like your first guitar teacher.
Yeah. And, you know, I resisted, I guess I didn't resist it, but I wasn't a great student. I was more into the punk rock. You know, I ended up getting into super into the Clash, and, you know, I liked bands like The Cure and The Talking Heads, and I had my own punk band that was kind of like a poppy punk band. That was my life. That's what I cared about. And then the lessons were kind of, you know, I'd show up and he'd be like, did you practice? And I'd be like, you know, no. And yeah, as a teacher now, because I teach a lot now, I've been teaching for 20 years, private lessons. And that's why I started the YouTube channel I hope it's okay. I'm just kind of, you know, going with the story here. But I started the YouTube channel about 2 years ago, just because, you know, I was like, wow, I've been teaching for all this time. I was like, I want to put it somewhere and expand and help more people. But I'm really tolerant as a teacher. And I think people really like it. Like, I just am all about it being a positive experience for people. Cause I wasn't doing my homework when I was a kid, but I benefited so much from the exposure and from the consistency and from the experience and from just, you know, someone saying, hey, check out this thing that you have no idea exists. And then, you know, I was like trying to figure out Charlie Parker solos when I was a young teenager, not doing a great job at it. I know some kids at that age are, you know, really into jazz and that's their thing. And these kids, you know, get, you're really prolific at jazz. For me, it was just one thing going on out of many things going on. And then I did end up going to college for music and I studied classical guitar and then got a degree in jazz studies. Just so that's where all the academic, you know, kind of stuff comes from. And on the channel, you know, I really wanted to do a YouTube channel and I just want it to be super consistent. And it's just something I know, you know, the theory is just something I know about and that I've taught a lot. And so I just, you know, got to teach what you know and try to spin it in a way that is positive and helpful. And I try to put it into a context where it people can really use it. Like I say, here's how it's actually useful instead of just abstract, you know, information.
Yeah. Which I think is important because actually I was watching one of your videos this morning before I went to the gym on modes.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah. I think you were doing a C scale or something. Yeah. You were doing a C scale.
Yeah. The modes of the major scale. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now the way I interpret it is that the modes, right. Dorian and so forth. Right. You're just starting on a different note within that C major scale. Right? Did I hit that right on a nut?
Yeah, that is correct. Right. And just to put my teacher hat on for a second for anyone listening, that is, you know, the common way to put it. And it, like in that video and in general, I clarify or expand on it in saying that it's not just starting on it. It's really just that you treat a certain note as the root. So you don't, you know, if you're playing the scale up and down from the root to the root, yeah, you start on it and you end on it, but you can start on any note and it's how you kind of think of that, you know, you rearrange what note is the root, and a note being the root doesn't mean you have to start on it. And now I'm talking about, you know, obviously if you're improvising or something like that, you don't always want to start on the root. So I don't mean to get pedantic about it, but it's a great clarification for anyone watching, because that initial understanding of modes is it's just a slight tweak in the way we describe it, but it's a big difference. I mean, in application and really using it, it's a big difference.
Yeah. Like for me, I'm kind of like self-taught on a guitar. I mean, I had like 2 years of piano lessons, but for me being self-taught, I'm like at the point now where I want to learn like how certain songs I like, why do I like them? Why do they sound like that? I mean, I don't think the musicians that I like actually say, oh, you know, I'm putting the song in Dorian mode when they wrote it. It just happened to be that way.
Yep.
But I just like the idea of learning more theory and understanding like why things are done a certain way. Maybe cool. Help me understand how, you know, like learn a song faster and so forth like that. So that's why I like your particular channel, you know. So like I saw your channel, first video was on chord inversions, then you had another one which you teach people how to make chords pretty much like if a verse like out of anywhere, like if someone gives you a chord progression, you don't have to think, you don't have to like look at the fretboard, you know, you kind of like pick them as you choose. And then you had all these like diagrams, you have the colorful chord chart, you have the most common patterns for scales and stuff. So for people who want to like learn more about theory, I highly recommend his channel. He all gives a lot of stuff away too for free on your website, which I think is kind of unique,
you know? Downloads. Yeah, I have a lot of free like PDF downloads and I talk about them in the videos, and I mean it's like what you're doing, you know, you're putting out your stuff for free, and it feels good to give and for people to find it and grow an audience that way to help people, you know? So I think the more free stuff that is really valuable, and, you know, I'm trying to give away free stuff that, and people do email me and they're like, wow, like, why is this free? Why did you not charge for this? But in my opinion,
I'm wondering like, why do you, I mean, I didn't know, like, you know, some people it's like the goodness of their heart. Some people it's like, oh, well, if you like this, then you have another course that you're all for, which we'll get into in a second, because you get several courses that you're
Yeah.
Now. But like, what was the motivation factor? Was it just the goodness of your heart, or to welcome people more to your channel so that there's more value? Or
it's a combination of all those things. I mean, it is absolutely a pleasure to be able to give away quality stuff that people think, you know, competes with something they might buy. I mean, that feels great, but it's not 100% that, because it is a business. And it's, I have stuff for sale. I have two courses that I sell, and it's not for everybody. I don't expect, you know, I don't expect anyone to buy it. It's just for that small, small number of people that are like, whoa, I'm so serious about this. I want to go super deep. And it's just better business. The more stuff I can give away and try to do my very, very best with, the more people are going to trust me and say, wow, you really, you know, care about this, and this was effective, and this helped me. I don't think anyone's going to buy anything. I think it's just the way things work now. Like, people aren't going to buy something from someone like me, who's doing like an educational type of, you know, selling an educational product. I think they have to get some kind of result first, where they're like, oh yeah, okay, I get it. Like, I'm sold on this person having stuff that works for me. Now I feel like I can, you know, maybe spend some money on them. And I'm the same way. You know, I like to learn online, and as we all know, if you go start learning online, there's going to be angles coming at you for people trying to sell you stuff. And the people that we may or may not buy something, the people that we might buy something from are the people that already blew us away. And so, but, you know, that being like, okay, it is a business, and I just, you know, like everybody else, I need to make a living, but I'm so grateful to be able to do it this way, because it's just a fun way to do it. Like, I'm one of the best things I can do is make more stuff to give away, because it just, more people might find me, I love when people, you know, are learning from my free stuff, and I don't think for a second about if they're going to buy something. I just don't, you know, I'm not like, oh, if you like, you know, cause people will find it if I keep doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just care about them having a good learning experience. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, it definitely does. Now, is teaching your full-time job, so to speak? Is that like your main source?
I started teaching lessons when I was at the beginning of going to college, and I was like in my early 20s. I went to college late. I took a few years off and then just figure out what I want to do. And I was like, well, I just want to do music. So I'm going to try to go to college for music. And that's when I started playing classical guitar, because I looked up like what programs, you know, and they had classical guitar program. And I was like, that was the only way to get in for music. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go for it. And I just went like crazy full force. But I started teaching. Actually, the way I started teaching is so funny. There's this guitar store that's like a old school, like used guitar shop, really well known in Seattle. Their logo is a big like cartoon flying V that looks exactly like the flying V that I had as my first guitar. So anyway, obviously pre-pandemic, it's a place where people would go and you get used instruments and you could sell stuff and trade stuff and everything like that. So I was in there with my brother, helping them find a guitar. He wanted to buy one. And so I was, you know, grabbing some guitars and playing some stuff and just testing them out. We were just hanging out there. And then this mom and a kid come up to me, and just cause I was playing, and she goes, do you teach guitar lessons? Cause you know, she's looking for buying a guitar for her 10-year-old kid, which is like when I started. I never taught any lessons before, ever. Minus just helping out friends, or, you know, questions that people ask me or something, not officially or getting paid for it. And I sat there like, I was already kind of thinking like, how am I going to start making some money? And like, you know, I was like, in my mind, I was like, maybe I should start teaching, because I had been taking lessons. And I think my dad kind of was encouraging me too. He's like, you need to figure out a way, and like, you need to maybe start teaching, because you know how that works. And so I just, you know, was sat there and I was like, yeah, I do. And they were like, great, give me your number. Then they called me like the next week, and I got that one student. I taught that one student for like 10 years. And that's how my teaching started, because then I started teaching like a bunch of their friends. And then I started teaching it just kind of spread from there. So I was able to teach while I was going through school for college, for when I was studying classical and jazz guitar. And then when I graduated, I was playing a lot of gigs, playing wedding gigs, playing, you know, hustling around with my guitar and doing, you know, doing the kind of like professional musician thing. But it's I didn't like it so much. Teaching was the most consistent, the most kind of rewarding, the most sustainable. So over time, I kind of just leaned into that more. And I've been teaching private lessons since then, this whole time. When I started the YouTube channel, and I was, you know, making a living just mainly on private lessons, started the YouTube channel right before the pandemic. So it was a good time. I know a lot of people started their stuff after the pandemic hit, but I started mine like 2 or 3 months before. And I was just, my schedule was full. People would email wanting lessons, and it was a great problem to have, but I had to turn people away. And I was like, it would be awesome if I just had a video I could send this person to answer their question instead of them having to schedule a whole hour with me and pay me and stuff like that. Yeah.
Now the business side of my mind was saying like, well, I teach my kids this, like, you know, whatever they do, like, cause they're young, you know, my oldest is going to college, and I'm like, whatever you do, try to pick, do something that you like. It'd be great if you make money at it. I grew up in the old school where you go to college and you go to work. And that's
it. Yeah.
But I'm at the point now, or you know what? It would be nice to have done something that you love, right? And if you can make money at it, that's great.
Yeah.
So I was trying to teach my kids the concept of economy and scales. And when I hear you talking, like, you probably had to turn students away because you only have so many hours in a day. Did you ever think of like maybe hiring like another teacher and just paying them?
I thought about it. And I had a friend that really was encouraging me to do that. He was like, you could start a whole company out of this where you're kind of running it. And then you have these teachers. And I kind of felt like I had two choices. One was in terms of trying to expand and, you know, take advantage of, you know, building it more, you know, do that and hire more teachers and kind of run it, or do this kind of scaling myself doing it, which is the videos, you know, like, okay. So this is my version of doing that. Like, essentially I'm the employee. Every video I make is my own, you know, duplicate of myself teaching a bunch of people at once. And so that's the way I chose, because I think in terms of, you know, my teaching private lesson business doing well and having getting to that point where I had to turn people away, I think it just has everything to do with my attitude about teaching. And I can't guarantee that people I hire have that, you know. And I think the way that I'm just, I don't know,
you hit it on the nail. Right.
Yeah. I'm just all about encouraging people and just being positive and really listening deeply to what, you know, people need and want and why they're, and just enjoying the connection. And that's what a lot of people want with, you know, lessons. And then also just my take on music and whatever I'm teaching, whatever topic I'm teaching, which is, interestingly, it's kind of, in the end, I have this attitude of like, it doesn't really matter that much. You know, we're trying to find some kind of meaning and fulfillment and enjoyment. And especially most people taking lessons just want some music in their life. They're not trying to be some professional. So I just don't take it. I'm serious about it as an art, a practice, a business, you know, all this stuff. And I'm also serious about not taking it too seriously. And I think that it would just be too hard to ensure that people I hire as a teacher have that.
You know, that's the key. Like, I think for businesses, right? If you want to scale, you got to have trust in the people you hire, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't, you can't scale. So that it's a little twisted. So then you're limited. But you know, it all depends. Like, you know, if you're doing good as what you're by yourself, then so be it. I just had to ask that question because I was like curious.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and also just to expand on that a little bit is. What influenced my decision too is how many nightmare stories I hear about other teachers when people come to me and they are just coming defeated, like almost about to quit because some teacher said some negative thing to them, or, you know, had people say things like, I had a student come to me who had one lesson with another teacher that on the first lesson, that teacher, and they were in their 50s. They were starting guitar from scratch, never played an instrument, just wanted to give it a go. And that teacher said to them, oh, you know, you might be one of these people that doesn't actually have the ability to have rhythm. It's very rare, but you might be one. Just based on this first lesson, I think that might be the case. But let's do a couple more lessons and see if that's true before I tell you if you should quit or not. So he didn't go back to that guy. Came to me totally defeated. Any of us would be that, right? He wanted to try this thing. He wanted to play guitar all his life and loves music and comes to me. And I'm just like, that is 100% BS. Like, it's just literally not possible or not true. So I did as much work as I could to kind of unwind that conditioning to now, what is it? Maybe 3 years later that I'm still working with that student. He is the most consistent practicer out of any student I've ever had. He practices half hour a day. That's it. Consistently all the time. Of course, maybe here and there misses a day because life is crazy, but
but
he's doing awesome. He's playing along with Cure songs. He's playing, you know, he's working on improvising now. He does not have an issue with timing or rhythm. It's totally fine. And it's just sad because he still occasionally brings up that, you know, that issue. He's like, do you think I maybe have that rhythm thing? And I'm like, no, man, you're good. Like, it's just, you know, we're all so vulnerable. Like, we can't be saying negative things to people like that. So I don't know what's up with that, you know, where that other teacher got that. But anyway, just an example of a nightmare story where I would hate to accidentally have a teacher that I hired have some kind of attitude like that.
You know? Yeah, so that's what you got to deal with, though, right? You take that chance. Now, with your lessons, did you come up with your own structured lessons plans for your students, or like on your own, or did you use something that you learned from college? Or
that's a good question. Mostly like 95% just my own thing, because, and I shouldn't say it's my own thing because that makes it sound like I, you know, have some original grand plan or something. It's really the intuition of following what's the most meaningful to the student. So it's not really my plan as much as it's listening really carefully to what excites people and what their goals are, and checking in on that time and time again, and steering what we're working on towards the thing that they're going to feel the most fulfilled about. So it is my plan based on that. And so with every single student, it's unique and it's different. The only exception is that I use, if someone wants to really kind of straight and narrow do a classical guitar direction, then I use a classical guitar method book. And within that framework of using the method book, which is just kind of nice because it starts off with here's exercises, and you kind of graduate to a little etude or something like that. But within that framework, I do the same thing as the other stuff, where I pepper in everything, a lot of stuff that's not in the book, or practice strategies for just effective practicing. And but I, at least for the just the material itself, I use that book. But because I teach a lot of theory and improvisation, it's just kind of all over the map, and I kind of just wing it based on what people are excited about. But that's after doing this also for 20 years. Early on, I was very, you know, I'm a huge introvert. I was anxious about, you know, meeting with people and stuff like that, but I got comfortable with it over time and it was good for me. But I would, you know, I would plan at the beginning of the day, if I had lessons, I would go through each student, check, I had notes on what they did the week before. I would like write down ideas for like, ooh, here's what we could do this time. So I really, you know, wanted to do a good job and took it seriously. Over time, I was able to just kind of do that with less of the kind of planning ahead of time.
Yeah, experience comes with experience.
Yeah.
Now, you said that growing up, you were more into the punk and the grunge rock scene, but then you started learning jazz music and classical music. But when I watch you on your channel, it seems like you actually, I would have never known that you were into the grunge music. Now, I don't know if that's because you're going over theory, but do you find that you actually like playing jazz music now?
Or? Love it. Oh, I fell in love with it totally in its own. I mean, I'll listen to jazz all day. It's just not the only thing I care. You know, I know some jazz fans are just all about jazz, or classical is all about classical, or whatever genre. Some punk rock people only punk rock. But like, no, I listen to everything and love everything. I absolutely fell in love with jazz. I mean, it's just so deep and so challenging and so rich that I wouldn't be able to do, you know, teach what I'm teaching or care about it enough if it wasn't something that I just really loved on its own as well. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, cool. Now I got some couple questions for you from watching some of your videos. All right, I gotta get my glasses on because I can't. My eyes are bad now. Can't see my notes.
No worries.
All right, so I was watching. I think it was that one video I was showing you, explaining how you could go from one chord to the other, and you were covering. I think it was called the Guitar Shell Voicings Ultimate Guide.
Yeah. Shell voicings. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you explain to me and other people, like, what are shell voicings?
Sure. So shell voicings are, and this term is not universally used. I didn't even know about the term shell voicings until someone came into lessons and brought it up to me several years ago. But I know the chord type. It's a chord type that is a seventh chord, which means you have at least four notes, the one, the root, the third, the fifth, and then also adding a seventh to the chord. Whereas kind of all the normal typical open string chords that people think of, like I'm playing a C, I'm playing a G, those are triads that just have the root, the third, and the fifth. So a seventh chord has a fourth note, which adds texture. It makes it more rich, kind of gives a depth and a complexity to it. And those are the chords that are used in jazz music, but in tons of other music too, you know, that is influenced by jazz, funk and soul and R&B and now kind of lo-fi hip hop, and, you know, used all over the place. It just has this kind of like richer emotional texture. So those chords can be harder to, you know, physically play and just harder to figure out because there's more notes. We only have so many strings. We only have so many fingers. Shell voicings are this idea that you can play these seventh chords, these more complex chords, but with only three notes by not playing the fifth of the chord. So you're playing the root, which you need because it's the root, and you're playing the third of the chord, which you need because the third determines whether it's major or minor. So if it's not there, you don't know if it's major or minor. And then you need the seven because that determines if that seven is a natural seven or a flat seven, totally changes the sound. The five, not so much. It can kind of just, the fifth of a chord is this first note that we can take away because it's a little bit just implied all the time. And I'm not saying we like consciously acknowledge that it's implied, just the sound of it is kind of in there and not needed as much. It bulks up the sound a little bit. So it's this graceful kind of minimalistic approach to playing seventh chords and jazz chords with these very physically accessible, movable, simpler chord shapes. And that video, this is one of the things I give away. I have a PDF that I call Any Jazz Chord, and it's a method. Right,
that,
where
that was the name of it. Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, and it's this method where you can take only eight shapes total, eight guitar chord shapes total, and literally use those to apply to and play any jazz chord that exists, any crazy chord. We're talking like G7 sharp 11 add 9 or something, like anything that comes up because of how much you just choose to ignore. That's not 100% a necessary and essential part of the sound. And that stuff could be added later, but it's not like the core of the sound. So calling it shell voicings is nice. And I've realized that's a term that people use quite a bit and people are searching for that a lot. So that video did quite well for me because people are searching for what are shell voicings. And now my video comes up, and that's, you know, that's the beauty of YouTube. When you hit it right, that's how it works well, you know.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that was the same video where I noticing when you were playing, the way you were navigating the fretboard going from one chord to the other would be the same way that I would be doing it on a piano or a keyboard.
Sweet.
The way I would be navigating, right? Like when I go from the C to the G, I would leave my one finger on the G and then switch it to B and D.
Nice. That, yeah.
And that's what you were, I think that's what you were kind of doing on a guitar, which I thought was interesting, which is what I was trying to figure out how I can do on a guitar. That's why I was looking for the inversions.
Awesome. Video. Awesome.
And I was like, so that, am I right? That seemed like what you were doing. Like you were going the way you were moving. And then I think it was also in that same video where I think it was, that might have been a different video. I think this was just an inversion video where you were saying that a chord shape is a different functioning.
Mm-hmm.
The chord
I looked
shape
up that
functioning deafening, right? From a
yes.
chord tone or something.
The inversions. The concept of an inversion is a chord where most people think of it as just the notes being in a different order.
Yeah.
The real definition of it is that there is a bass note. There's a note on the bottom, the lowest note, that is not the root. So that's one kind of clarification about inversions. It's not just that everything is flipped. It's not strictly a permutation of the order of the notes. It is that you could take just a regular chord and a bass player could throw a note on the bottom that's not the root, could be the third of the chord, could be the fifth of the chord, and it's an inversion. And so that's just one step of clarification. Then what you're asking about is the functionality of inversions. And so what I was clarifying in that video is that on the guitar, if we learn a guitar shape, a chord shape, and it's called, you know, in a book or someone says that this is an inversion, that means that the root is not the lowest note. So like you're playing a guitar chord shape where the root is not the lowest note. But musically speaking, outside of like guitar shape world, the idea of an inversion, the function of it and the purpose of it is to allow the lower notes, the bass notes in the music, to move smoothly between the chords, to move by step, to move melodically in a way that maybe somebody could sing easily. And that's where it comes from. It comes from choir music and individual voices of a choir singing lines, and the low bass singer doesn't have to jump around so much. They do sometimes still, but if you move one chord, and if you think on the piano, I mean, it's so much more. A big thing I'm all about is, you know, helping people clarify the fretboard on the guitar so we can see it as clearly as a piano player kind of more naturally sees the piano. But yeah, if you think about like on the piano, if anyone is a piano player out there and you play like a C chord and then right there in that spot you move to like a G chord or an F chord where it's the closest possible note.
I want to be able to do on the
guitar. And that's what like the inversions are
doing. That's what you're doing.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. That's a huge thing to work on the guitar. And then, so like we get that, like, okay, move to the closest possible notes. And now think of that lowest note that moved like a half step down. If you go from C to G, well, now just think of that as, oh, okay, that is this move. If that was the actual bass line, then it's just making it smoother to go between chords. And if you did that with a string of chords in a chord progression, you have this. And if you listen to classical music, you'll hear it all the time. You listen to the lowest note, it's like moving smoothly, or if you listen to choirs, it's moving smoothly. Yeah. But it's happening in that video I pointed out Queen songs that do it, and you know, it's used all over the place.
Mention a Beatles song, yeah, you can tell I watched your videos.
Awesome, man. Yeah,
I actually watched that. I'm probably gonna have to rewatch it again because I was like trying to like understand. I'm like, wow, this is like deep.
That's why it's awesome to have the videos out. That's why I just love having the videos out there. You know, it's like even in private lessons, people, and now that I'm doing private lessons on Zoom, people are like, hey, can we just record the whole lesson so I have a reference? You know, it's like having
it's like the benefit of doing stuff over Zoom, right?
Yeah.
Record it. Now I got like not musical technical questions. I got like YouTube technical questions for you.
Sure. Yeah. Let's talk YouTube.
To your courses and so forth.
Sure.
So I noticed that on your videos, like I'm like, do you use like special lighting or a camera? Because I use my phone. I don't know when I do mine, but I was just like curious.
There's
like
a big light box right here. So I have two of these.
Okay.
And it's just like the cheapest thing I could buy online. I don't have it plugged in now. Otherwise, I'd show you how bright it is. Oh, actually, yeah. It's just.
Yeah. Like yeah. Crazy. I was like wondering, like, wow. I didn't know if you had like a special lighting, like other than that, or was it like a LED lamp? Because I noticed like some YouTubers, they have like they use the lamps like that. Some of them use like LED lights or something like that, I think. Or a color.
Oh, yeah. With the color behind them, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not the screen, but like the way the way they light up the room.
Yeah. Yeah. That, so it's mostly these. And then, the room behind you, I wasn't doing a lot of that. A lot of my videos, I moved recently, so I'm in a different room and I have to kind of figure out how to make it look awesome again, but I had it super set up. I was in a basement apartment for my, those first 2 years of doing YouTube. And it was basically just one big open room, and it's fun because there's like a unicycle behind me and there's, you know, my bike is hanging and there's all these books and it's just a big open room. So those lights on me and then the background does look kind of glowy, but it looks kind of like orange, just because I'm in a basement apartment, there's no like outside light coming in. And so it looks kind of intentional and good. And I just kind of tweaked it over time. It was also a big thing about it was finding the right camera setting and like learning about, oh, if I'm using these lights that have a certain, see, now I don't even remember the term.
Use a special camera, or you don't use your phone then? You use like a special camera then?
I use a what do they call them? DSLR. Yeah, but I use my phone a lot too for like a separate angle or something like that. I think the phone is great. I think using the clunky camera, it gets in the way sometimes, but I figured out how to use it that works for me at least. But I mean, the phone makes it easy. Some videos I'll just use the phone. Yeah. But I think even with the phone, there's just a principle of filming, and this is stuff I don't know about. I had to like look it up and figure it all out, but it's like the white balance of the lights. Then there's a setting of, and now I don't know the knit term for it, but anyway, camera people will know that you have to kind of match the number with it. So I don't know what it is, because I just have it set on that now. But when I did that, I'm bringing it up because when I did that, like if anyone goes, if you go look at my earlier videos and then just jump to a later video, you'll see like, oh, the lighting and the color like
looks
completely different. But I didn't change anything externally. I was using the same lights, all of that.
It was just setting on the camera.
Just that one setting.
That's awesome. And then I noticed that sometimes you are able to display like a diagram.
Yeah.
On there. Do you use like software to edit into your video or something? And then you have the notes. Sometimes you move the notes around.
Yeah, it's very time consuming. It is I use Premiere, the Adobe editing software. Premiere Pro from Adobe. So I pull everything into that, and like I just know that, and I definitely have plenty of videos that don't use graphics too, but I'm just like, I'm always thinking like, what's gonna actually make this helpful for somebody, you know? And I know that if I'm talking about some of that confusing stuff on the fretboard, if there's not a visual to go along with it, it's gonna be, you know, people are gonna get lost. And so it's been a journey working that out. I actually have someone that helps me with editing now, which is super helpful. So
people don't realize how time consuming it is.
Oh
yeah.
Very. Yeah. So I have an editor now, and he's awesome, and we get along great, and I can send him stuff, and still takes time, because I have to conceive of everything. He's not just going to add stuff. You know, I have to say, I have to describe, here's how I think it should be. And then I go, you know, give him feedback and stuff. So we have a process, but it's awesome to have the help. And yeah, I'm really all about just making what's going to make this video actually helpful for people. And sometimes that means something that you got to put it, the time consuming graphics. I have a vision for my next phase of what I want to do is I want to start doing some live videos, and I'm like, how can I do it quicker and live with all the diagrams? So I'm looking into software and things I can do to like pull up different screens.
Yeah, I'm sure they got software like that. Like eventually I'll be putting out more piano lessons, and I actually bought the software, and I can't think of it yet for my keyboard.
Oh, okay.
People are watching this, they better appreciate it. I actually bought a brand new keyboard because I had a MIDI interface on it.
Sweet.
So I used this software with my laptop. Sweet. So when I press the keys, it'll actually show up on the screen.
I see people do that. Yeah.
So then I could use Zoom to record me talking while I'm pressing the keys.
Nice.
That's going to be the next phase.
I'll be stoked to check those videos out.
Yeah. I'll let you know when I put them out. Right now, I got some like your reviews.
Yeah, you got a lot of stuff going. Yeah.
Yeah. But what I wanted to talk to you about before I let you go, because I know you're busy and stuff. But you got these two courses. One, I think, one's called Chords on Command.
Yeah.
And the other one is called Nail the Changes. Now, Nail the Changes, I think, is your new one, right?
Just came out. Yeah.
And I don't even think, because you have dates on there. I guess we could go over that one first. You got dates. Sure. I don't know if that means that it's in progress. Is that what that means?
I'm in the middle of, of creating that course. I shouldn't say creating it, because it's a method that I've been teaching for a long time, but I did a course launch for it a few weeks ago, like second or third week of January. Because it doesn't matter for when people are watching this, but like I just recently, as of when we're filming this, just launched this course in this fashion, where one of the selling points about it for my audience was like, hey, I'm going to be building this every week. It's kind of semi-live. I called it semi-live. I'm not teaching it live because it's too hard to figure out time zones and getting people to show up. So it's like, it's semi-live. Every week I'm creating the training for one of the modules and sending it to the people who bought it. So a bunch of people bought it as kind of like pre-order, not really pre-sale, but like we're going through it right now. It's like a class. And so I delivered the first module on Monday this week. And then I'm, you know, right now in the middle of filming the second one, and that'll go to them on Monday this next week. So it's this way of me, you know, creating the course. These videos I'm making now will be the product in the future. That will just be the course that I'll sell again and people can buy. But I'm doing it this way where it's fun because I'm walking through, students are giving me feedback and commenting and everything like that. So because of that, it's not at the moment, it's not open. You know, it's not something people can enroll in or purchase because it's closed down. I just sold it just to those people who want to go through it with me this way. And then later I'll open it up again. But that course is, oh man, I've been wanting to make this course for so long because it's this approach I've been teaching about how to improvise over any chord changes in like really, and that's why it's called nailing the changes, like nailing harmony, nailing the chord progressions, improvising in a way that is targeting the actual chords as they go by, which unlocks all of these beautiful, what I call built-in melodies. I mean, it's just the music is kind of there for us if we follow the right path. It takes a lot of work, but I have a system and kind of a methodology for how to practice doing that. If anyone, you know, anyone's guitar players out there who likes to noodle around or improvise, we know that just kind of playing with that pentatonic scale for forever is a place we can get to semi-quickly and sound good and enjoy. And then how do you go beyond that? How do you break out of that? How do you, you know, address something that changes in the music so you can feel like you're right there when the harmony changes? So it's a program all about that. And it's a lot of material, but anyway, that's what I'm going through right now.
That's actually smart, which actually, after we talk about chords on command, which is your other course, I just thought of another question I had to ask you.
Yeah, go for it.
So what's the chords on command course?
The chords on command course is my theory course, and I'm kind of packaging like total fretboard and theory clarity through this vehicle of saying, okay, let's learn theory in a way that is really like directly useful for something. Like let's apply it to something. And so the application that I'm using is that I'm going to go through all this material, and the end result is that people who go through that training will be able to understand, analyze, or create from scratch literally any chord type, which depending on the music you're interested in may or may not sound like that matters that much, but from simple to you know, any complex chord, knowing from scratch, not memorizing shapes, not you know, from actually like, and therefore being able to create any voicing of it anywhere. So it's not a hands-on kind of practice these things, though there is a like upper tier where I have some technique exercises, but the core kind of program is all about the layout of the guitar. And so it starts with understanding the scales really well, so we see all the intervals and has exercises for it and everything like that, all the way to if you had to start randomly on any note on the guitar, and then I told you that you have to build any type of chord from there in any inversion, whatever, it's all kind of built into the program. So that's why it's called Chords on Command, because it's like the idea is once you have that training, you could just say, oh, okay, do I want to play this chord here? Maybe I want to construct it somewhere else and play it like this. And so it's just more
I find that pretty interesting and cool, because sometimes you're on one chord and you want to go another chord, but going to traditional route may be very awkward for you to go nice and smoothly to that chord. So you know another way. Like I was choosing an example, when I'm on a keyboard or piano, I use inversions all the time. I don't go like block chords, because then it wouldn't work out for me. It wouldn't be smooth transition.
There you go. Yeah.
And then I got one more question. I noticed that you have like a mailing list, right? I guess, I think I signed up for one of your probably the chord chart or something.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I noticed that I keep getting emails. Is that so that people get in tune as to what new videos you're putting out, in addition to, hitting the notification bell and so forth?
So the email list is, you know, I have an email list, sign up, and then, you know, or if anyone downloads any of my free PDFs, which are all on just the front page of my website, then yeah, then it, I signs them up on my email list. Of course, people can unsubscribe easily anytime. Yeah. But
I thought it was actually pretty clever though.
Oh, good. I'm glad you thought so. It's, you know, and it was hard to do at first because we think like, oh, I don't want to bother people and stuff like that. But people who want to stay in touch, it's, they love it. You know, it's great. And like I said, people, if they don't want it, they unsubscribe. That's fine. And so every Tuesday I put out a video lesson, and every Tuesday I send an email to the list and say, hey, here's what this new lesson is about. Here's the link to it. And you can go check it out. So it, you know, I stay in touch with people that way. They'll reply and ask a question. And that's a fun way to just be connected and have the people who want to be, you know, closer, let them be closer. And then, you know, transparently from a business perspective, that's the only way, that's how I sell the courses, you know? So the people
was very, very smart. And it helps me out because sometimes like people don't, all right, when you, people go subscribe to a YouTube channel, I don't know if everybody knows this or not, you don't automatically get the notification when a new video comes out unless you purposely hit that notification bell. I think a long time ago, you did.
Way long ago, yeah.
Notified,
right.
Right. And then that's why, you know, like if you hit that bell, then you get a little prompt on your phone, hey, a new video came out.
Right.
But a lot of times I hit subscribe, I always forget to hit the notification button.
Yep.
But what I noticed, like with you, I'm like, oh, he's got a new video out. Let me check it out. There's another guy, I think his name is Robert Baker. He's got an interesting channel too.
Oh, that name's awesome. Him.
Yeah. Yeah, he does, you'll recognize him. He's got the long hair from the 80s, even though he's like probably only 30.
Yeah, I've probably seen him, yeah.
He's got a very popular channel. And so, he does the same thing. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. This way I know what the video is about even before I go to YouTube.
Yeah. I think
that's pretty good. Maybe I should start doing it.
Yeah, I think the little description is kind of nice. Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. So I had to ask that. I just wanted to know if it was like a marketing whatever. It's kind of is, but you're also keeping.
Yeah, and then to tie
connections open with your viewers and so forth, which I think
And to tie it together with, you know, some of what we talked about before in terms of the free stuff versus the paid stuff and the courses and stuff, like I don't want to try to sell anything to, you know, through the YouTube channel or on the social media channels. I want it to be, you know, I want that to just be the front-facing thing, and then it's only the people who said, oh yeah, you know, let me know about everything. And then they get to know. And because, so it's a little keeping things a little separated in terms of the free stuff and the paid stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great, man. That's great. Yeah. Hey, before I forget, everybody watching this, you can help my channel again, not just by subscribing to an notification button. If you go down into the links below, you'll see a link to websites, rhetoricalfamilybooks.com, or you can go on amazon.com and buy one of the books that either me and my daughter authored, including The Kabbalah Saga Begins or
Nice.
The Vampire. She's got her own series called Invisible Girl. I just had to throw that out.
Sweet.
Instead of having a separate video, I just throw it out there to make it nice and clear.
It was
great having you on a channel. And for guys, check out his websites called soundguitarlessons.com.
Yeah.
And of course, check out his YouTube channel. I think it's great. It's called Sound Guitar Lessons. If you want to learn why things sound a certain way, particularly if you're into guitar or whatnot, check it out. I mean, I find it fascinating. I think Jared does a great job explaining things. And, you know, some people, when they do the theory, you know, and you fall asleep.
That's right. Yeah.
I hate to say
I'm trying
that,
to not
right?
do that.
That's
yeah,
why I think a lot of people don't really like theory, but
I think so too.
I think you do an awesome job.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thanks.
I really enjoy your content. So keep it up, man.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Yeah, appreciate that. And it's all not right. The only thing, you know, eventually I'll talk about all the other, right now I'm in the middle of a series of jazz improvisation, but it's going to be pretty broad. I talk about a lot of things, but there's a lot of theory stuff on there. And yeah, but awesome. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been a blast.
Yeah, man. Take care. All right, everybody. Again, don't forget to subscribe to the channel, give this video a thumbs up for a like, and hit the notification button so you know when I put out new videos. All right, guys. And don't forget, keep on rocking.
Hi.
Hi, this is Coralyn Jewell. You're listening to the Mark the Shark podcast show.
Hi, everyone. Well, fortunately, all good things must come to an end, and that's all we have for this particular podcast episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you keep following my podcast here, the Mark the Shark Show, and keep listening and look out for future podcast episodes.